John Johnson, better known as JJ, author of The Market Vibes by Alyosha Substack. Welcome to The Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be here.
So, you know, it's a new year, 2026, and the old Chinese proverb of living in interesting times, maybe it's more of a curse at this point. It seems no more appropriate than now. We have escalating conflicts everywhere around the world, energy markets that seemingly can be affected by that, stock markets at all-time highs, while some central banks are easing and others are tightening. What do you see as mattering most in the year ahead?
AI, probably. It's a tremendous unknown. It's well understood to be beyond our human realm of understanding, which is kind of crazy. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what part of this is really good. You know, is Musk says that we're not going to need money. Well, it sort of reminds me of the movie Cocoon, you know, where you know these aliens, they come in, and I don't know if you remember it, it's an 80s movie. And they say, you know, towards the end of the movie, we'll never be hungry, we'll never die, we'll never get old. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, it's a science fiction movie. So we are on a runaway freight train into the future with no idea where the boundaries are, no brakes, just the promise of when you think about it, is bad. We're going to create a super creature which is smarter than we are. We'll never be able to compete with it. It'll be able to do everything that we like to do. I'm watching these robots being developed, and so I'm thinking, you know, we're kind of being walked into some kind of a zone where, you know, we ourselves will cease to have any meaning. So I think that's the most important thing. And if it does arrive, you know, what we're going to talk about today, you know, the price of silver or gold, or whether or not Goldman Sachs will go to $2,000 a share. I mean, it's already at $1,000. Mm-hmm. I can't see how those things are relevant.
Because of AI?
Yeah.
So the price of physical goods become irrelevant because of AI?
We become irrelevant. Mm. Right? What do we do? What are you going to do? I suppose you and I could, we could carve out some kind of a human world in an AI world, but we'll always be subordinate to AI once it becomes generative and then super, as they say. You know, I don't think I'll be around for that, but I don't imagine it will be very good for the people who have to deal with it. That's just my thinking. But then again, you know, I'm a 20th century guy. And I grew up in a time where the only rules I had were to be home before dark. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the rules for children are never go outside. They live inside their phones. Mm-hmm. So if you were to take that as like a trend of what I grew up with and then what my kids grew up with in the 90s and Y2K years and so forth, there's tremendous freedom. Now there is no freedom. Mm-hmm. And it's shrinking for everything that they're doing, you know, WEF and stable coins and CB digital currencies, things like that, where they'll be able to track every toothbrush and Pepsi that you buy at the local gas station, that, you know, that's data they'll consume and it'll feed it into AI and it'll produce a result which will probably have an impact on everything everyone does. Mm-hmm. So there, that's what I think the biggest deal is.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting the way that Musk talks about it. I mean, I think it was the last Rogan podcast that he did. He said, you know, everybody will be super wealthy. And it's kind of like, well, what is this new definition of wealth, right?
I don't know. I mean, I know what wealth is now. I see Bezos and Zuckerberg racing their yachts side by side. You know, each one of them is worth like, you know, $500 million or something. So that would be wealth. Wealth is the, you know, the possession of a tremendous amount of power. So I'm not sure how that translates to us. You know, I don't see that.
JJ, what do you think, you know, explains this odd market that we have right now? Like, the we have the stock market at all-time highs, gold at all-time highs, and yet the Fed is starting to ease. So these things, in many ways, this correlation would have been unthinkable at many other times in history. What do you think explains that? Is that also kind of down to AI at this point?
No. It's just that's just a tremendous amount of money, cash. Let's just say that.
Liquidity, so, maybe?
What?
Liquidity, maybe?
Yeah, liquidity, cash. There's, you know how the optic nerve sees everything upside down and your brain turns it right side up? Mm-hmm. Right? I'm sure you've seen that, right? What you're actually seeing is upside down. Your brain turns it right side up. So everything looks like it's right side up. So I think you have to imagine gold not moving at all. Let's just say gold never moves, right? Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't. It's the most consistent value measure that we have. Everything else is going down. The value because we quote, you know, the things we need in life, salaries, mortgage payments, and everything like that in dollars. Well, the value of the dollar is just crashing. That's exactly what's happening. So gold is not moving. Silver is a kind of a fundamental squeeze situation. There's so many stories around it. I don't think anybody's going to know exactly what the truth is in silver other than a paper derivatives, which are so much greater in terms of their value that as they're being forced to liquidate, they're affecting the auction of the physical metal. Because that's, you know, everything is based on physical and commodities. Commodities are pretty much a cash market. So if you write a lot of, you know, gamma and all that other stuff around it, and you do that for 15 or 20 years, and you can't liquidate it, so you keep manipulating it, sooner or later, you know, we have this. So no one knows what the right price for that is. I don't think people are buying gold because of inflation right now. I think, you know, central banks are buying gold because they don't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you have all of the central banks not trusting anyone, then they're going to intuitively, being people, they're going to lean to gold. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, top down comes down to everybody else. We don't have that in America. We have we still have a free society in a way, where it's because we have Trump right now, and Trump is proving, you know, that the legal system is still functional in the United States because he's using it in a way where no one ever dreamed a politician would. But so we don't need to buy gold right now because I think we're a little more confident in the way our country functions. But the Chinese are completely different. You know, they're not like this at all. The Chinese government, I covered ICBC for about 6 years, working for a bank a long time ago. And I learned a lot about the way they see gold and silver. The people in China, you know, none of them trust anything, but they are encouraged to buy gold So any Chinese citizen can walk in right off the street, put some yuan down or RMB, and get ounces of gold for it and take it home. Or you can keep it in a safety deposit box in a bank or whatever. But it's readily accessible, and the government encourages its people to buy it. We're the absolute opposite of that. It's been pounded in our heads since gold was legalized that gold was not a good thing. It was a threat to the financial industry. The government is encourages the exchanges and the banks to suppress it. You can't buy it anywhere. It's impossible to make sizable private transactions on public exchanges in the United States because of position limits and reporting and so forth. So all of the main business in gold and silver has gone to China, where it's a different type of restrictions, but it's much easier to trade a lot of it. So that's why I think gold is going up. It's not, people they don't have inflation in their face all the time. As a matter of fact, rather than what we had in the 70s, we keep hearing inflation is declining, CPI is going down, the Fed is in control, everybody's cool. So, you know, people are not thinking, wow, you know, I have to buy gold and I have to buy a lot of it right now but really what's happening is gold is the most declarative statement in finance that all paper currencies are falling in tandem together at an incredibly fast rate. And, you know, I don't do the shopping, but every now and then when I do, let's say the wine that I would go buy in the rack last year, say $30 a bottle, $30, $35, that's $65, $70, $80 a bottle now. Mm-hmm. That's double. So conversely, gasoline is really cheap. I don't know how long that's going to last. You know, usually when things get out of sync like that, Colombia, Panama, Mexico, these are not our friends. You know, they are not our friends. If they're, you know, the thing is, as though for all my life, being an American meant something. I understood what it was. There were shared values, uniform ideas. America was America. It was a place now, or at least certainly since Obama, a lot of people that live here are not Americans. Right. And a lot of the states, like, you know, Minnesota and a lot of other states, have taken their state flags down and created new Islamic flags, and they fly them. So the old America doesn't exist anymore, except in the minds of people like me who, still see the flag as like my country. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the future is going to be. And I'm not even sure whether it has any meaning in the context of a rising AI, because that may make all of that moot.
Hmm. But don't you think that let's say that struggle for meaning that humans are going to have, that you mentioned earlier, that is always going to be present in our minds and our, in a way, our DNA.
Okay, so half of the United States right now, this is half, 150 million people. This is not me. This is, government studies, the Barbara Bush Foundation and so forth. Cannot read at eighth grade level, cannot do math at eighth grade level. And the Bush Foundation says it's more like sixth grade level. because the standards that they're using today are from 2010. They're not equipped, you know, and I say that, I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean that the educational system in America that Trump, you know, has got his hair on fire about, you know, we're 44th at the bottom of the scale. We're the lowest. And there's, you know, you see things like Jesse Waters on TV, or that he used to, and now he's got some other guy who goes around with a microphone and says, you know, who is George Washington? So most people think George Washington was a basketball player, or they have no clue, you know, who's the vice president, no idea. And when I say they can't read at eighth grade level, that means that they have no exposure to literature. They have no exposure to the things that, you know, when I was in seventh grade, I took first year Latin. I read most of the classics by the time I was 13, and I was in public school. So, well, public high school. I went to private day school. But by the time I got out of high school, I had a college education. I mean, I had a high school education, which was better than most college grads. My children, I spent a stupid amount of money on their education. One of them graduated from college without ever having read a book. Fact. She went to a very, very good college. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure, you know, what happens to people, because the levels of awareness, if I listen to, I don't know, some YouTubes about AI, very intelligent people, the things they're saying, you know, I can grasp the concepts, but I have no idea how it's going to unfold. And the thing that scares me the most about it is they don't either. Mm-hmm. They know the direction we're going, but, you know, this singularity word and so forth. Just as there's, like, you know, concentration of wealth among a very, very tiny percentage of people that are alive today, the same thing is true for that kind of an awareness. Most of the people in America today can't do algebra, don't understand plane geometry, don't know very much about history, know nothing about American history, let alone Western Civ or any of that other stuff that, you know, give you a little bit of perspective about what's going on. So they don't know what they're missing or what they're losing.
But I think you're bringing up some interesting points that kind of point to really a bigger crisis of meaning that we're already in, right? You mentioned that we don't, let's say, as a U.S. society, we don't have the context of our historical time for the people that are now growing up. They're stuck in their phones. There's a lack of freedom. And then you bring in the idea of how many drug addicts there are. And I think if we had more meaning, there is a pretty typical and direct correlation with less drug use, right? And, you know, as I'm listening to you and kind of stepping back and seeing this, I feel like we're already in this crisis of meaning without the, or before the singularity moment that AI is purportedly going to really bring us, right?
I have no idea. I wish I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I trade every day. I enjoy writing about the markets because I understand them. So I live in that world, right? And I've been trading my whole life. That's the only job I ever had. So that's fine. I'm in my bubble. Right. And I live on a 7-acre property with beautiful trees. I'm lucky, you know, I haven't made a lot of mistakes in life, so I'm able to sequester myself in my own little environment, you know, got turkeys and foxes and all that kind of stuff. But the rest of the world, you know, I'm also very empathetic for what it's like to be lost in the modern 21st century. Usually you get all of that, you know, deep philosophical questioning out of your system when you're in your 20s, right? You grow up hating everybody and everything, and you know what you're not going to do, and you say, oh, I'm going to get this right and everything like that. But then you have to get a job, and you have to sort of like toe the line. You figure things out, you find the path up, you climb the ladder, you make money, and follow all of the organic paths that you can. Some people fall off the track, you know, they do stupid things, commit crimes, commit murders, get sent to jail, and so forth. But by and large, most of the people, at least in my generation, you know, we all do the same things, pretty much. And so then you wind up, you know, looking at this that singularity. It's such a dumb word. But there is that point in time, you know, which is it's come over the horizon. It's in view. It's moving very quickly, where we're all going to be different. You're not like when I was 22, I got a job working in construction. I wanted a little extra money. I walked on the side. I asked for a job. I got a job. I didn't know anything about construction, so I went, you know, I started off working on pouring concrete, which is backbreaking work, which is great for a guy who's 22 years old, because you could do it every day, right? And I learned how to do carpentry and hang drywall, and I had a partner, and we hung drywall and took beddings, worked sometimes 48 hours at a time at 2 cents a square foot. And I made a lot of cash, so I bought a car and wound up in New York. I got a job as a runner. You know, there was a fluidity to life growing up in those days. You could do all kinds of things. There was just jobs everywhere. Everybody had jobs, could get a job and move from job to job. And even in finance, when I was, you know, on Wall Street, where did I start? I started at Connie, then I went to Drexel. From there, I went to Rudolph Wolf. Rudolph Wolf got bought by Ehlers IXL. I left that company. Then I started my own floor brokerage company. I did that for like 7 years. And then gold went dead, and I had to fire everybody, and it was a nightmare. And so I went to work for Refco. And it was the best thing I ever did, and I made a ton of money. And then Refco went broke, and so I went to work for MF Global. From MF Global, I went to ICAP, ICAP to Standard Bank, ADM, and all along the line, you know, there was a kind of a buoyancy. And everybody I knew that started off writing brokerage at the exchange, we were all in the same river, all doing the same thing. Some people very successful, less successful. But none of that exists anymore. It's all gone, right? All of it. All of it. So what do we have? We have, let's do this. We have that. That's what we have. So I have this. This is my library. You can see. I don't know if you can see that, right?
Your thumb's over the camera.
Oh, sorry. Can you see that? All right. So what I want to say is that we have this. A year from now, we may not have that, or 2 years. I'm not sure what we'll have. Musk says we'll all be wealthy. We won't need money. I mean, how do you process that?
Yeah, what I found kind of missing in his explanation of that was the idea of resources, right? We're still going to need resources to live. We're going to need energy. We're going to need food. And I felt like that explanation of his was completely devoid of the idea of resource in some way, resource extraction and processing, right? And I think as many robots and AI as we can get, I think it takes a long time to get to the point that we have the ability to have robots and AI do all of that work to give us abundant food and abundant energy.
I have no idea. I mean, he says, like, I think he has a few thousand of his Optimus robots working at Tesla right now, and they're making, you know, mass producing them rapidly. I've seen a number of, you know, competitive products on X. People were, you know, making robots and selling them. They're doing jobs that we should be doing. Amazon, I can't remember how many thousands they have, or they have, you know, an army of robots. So soon everything will be autonomous. Mm-hmm. They'll cook, they'll wash, they will mow lawns, they'll do it faster, cheaper, better. They'll never get sick. They won't take vacations. So I just, you know, I'm trepidatious that there is no good ending here for you or me. So I buy gold, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. You know, I have too much. I can't spend it.
Well, JJ, when we think about how gold is behaving, let's say the gold market is behaving, is it a lot different than silver and platinum right now?
Yeah, much different.
And do you think the gold market going forward is it different this time going into 2026?
You know, I just wrote a really nice piece called It's Different This Time. I posted on Substack, I think, on Sunday. And I really got into why gold is different. Primarily right now, I'll say this, because we all share the same information, which, you know, we all have the same phones, and the phones are pretty much populated with the same kind of ideas that we all share. Gold has no enemies. Everybody buys it now. Everybody owns it now. Even though the culture in the United States is still anti-gold, you know, you don't have the same type of hostility towards it that we had in definitely the 80s, 90s, early Y2K years. First of all, like, the market cap of gold right now is that's all the extant gold in the world. It's about 220,000 tons, 7 billion ounces, is almost $31 trillion, which is a little bit more than the United States GDP, and about half of all of the stocks in the Standard & Poor's. So that's how big it is, right? So if you were to take, you know, call that a basketball, and you were to have silver, I think the flow of silver, the total AGS of silver is probably around 20 billion. So maybe $1 trillion. So gold is 30 times bigger, right? So 19 billion is all the silver in the world. Tertiary, secondary, and primary stocks. The float that we have is about 1 billion ounces. So if you take the big picture, yeah, gold is like 30 times bigger than silver. And the planet was the same, very, very small. So this is like a basketball and a BB, right? So they're very, very different. Any kind of stability between those, and from a monetary sense, we have to sort out, you know, whether or not we want to use them for industry or whether we want to use them for money. Mm-hmm. You know, if we use them for money, then it's going to, we have to find something else, because these are now critical to most of the things that we do for industry right now. Can't get along without silver to make stuff. Where gold, half of all the gold in the world is in jewelry, right? And then if you go down a little bit, maybe a quarter, 20%, let's say 40% is jewelry, 25% would be investment. Then there's central banks reserves, which are surprisingly small relative to it all. A little bit, maybe 20%, and then the rest is in embedded in industry and fabrication, which is very stable. So, you know, the ownership base of gold is extremely stable. It's very diffuse. No matter where price goes, more than 50% of all the gold in the world is not going to move. Mm-hmm. It may, you know, I mean, if it goes up enough, you know, your wife may sell her earrings, something like that. But it's not like, so then we have a very good stock of investment gold and central bank gold. But the central banks that are buying now, they're very sticky. You know, they're not going to get out of it for at least a generation. And they're buying every day, all the time. So looking at gold, it's very easy to see why it is what it is. You know, it's just the base of ownership is very stable and transparent. Demand for the metal is marginally better than supply. The industry is extremely well managed at every level of the supply chain. That would be, you know, the producers, the financial industry, the official side, the investment side. It's a very healthy business end to end. Silver is crazy town. It always has been a very violent market, very thin market. It has this kind of culture around it where, you know, people think of it like gold. Oh, well, gold goes up, I'll buy silver. Gold is a store of value. Silver is an arena of greed. And it, you know, if you approach silver without a clear understanding of what it is, it's incredibly dangerous. I've been trading silver all my life, right? And I've seen it do. I haven't seen it go up like this, but I've seen it go down in 2011 when everybody was, you know, riding the China train. So I go down like $13 from a Thursday close to a Monday opening. And in those days, we didn't have the kind of, you know, Goldbix that we have now. So, I mean, if you were in, you were stuck. Silver's a market where it's good when you've got it right, but you have to get out way before you think you should. Mm-hmm. Because if you overstay it, it's well, whatever it gives you, it'll take back double.
Right. Do you think that, you know, you mentioned earlier about if gold goes up enough, your wife will sell her gold earrings. Do you think that, let's say, marginal physical supply is coming into the market in silver at this point?
Yeah. Well, so the refineries are so backed up, they're not taking, you're only going to get so much out of the mines because, you know, 75% of it's incidental. It's coming as a byproduct of zinc and copper and things like that, right? And the market is trying to bring in more supply with these leaping prices. Let's just say you have 1,000 ounces of forks and spoons, right? And you want to sell them. Well, the refiner is not going to bid you the board price if it's, where is it now? So there's like, it's trading 81. You'll probably bid you like 65 for your 1,000 ounces. You want to sell silver 65 when it's trading anywhere on the board? No. But if you do, it's still going to take 6 weeks, 8 weeks to get it through the refinery to the bullion market. Mm-hmm. I'm throwing out prices here. I don't know. I haven't called anybody, but I've heard, by the way, that, you know, everybody's taking a lot of protection on their bids in silver because it's so volatile. And, you know, 1,000 ounces, if you take in 1,000 ounces, let's say the way it's been trading now, it's trading in and out, could be trading 70 tomorrow. So that 1,000 ounces is going to cost you 10 grand, and you're going to have to hold it for weeks before you get it. And then by the time you finally get it out into the market, you know, you're going to lose a lot of money. So there's not a lot of appetite to pay, you know, aggressive prices to bring it in. So that's keeping it out. And it's going to take a long time to get it through the system to turn it into good delivery bars. So that's keeping it out.
Well, JJ, we've had quite a wide-ranging conversation here today. I know we're kind of coming up against time for you. Is there anything that you'd like to leave our listeners to think about before we wrap up?
Don't be afraid to buy gold, even though it's gone up a lot. I think we're still in the we're still in the beginning. Excellent. Silver, I'd be very careful.
JJ, your writing is excellent, and you know, it's entertaining, it's factual, and I always learn something from it. Of course, all of your writing is available at Substack, jj745.substack.com, and of course on X as well, @alyosha745. JJ, thanks so much for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Tom.